And it's a trap.
No, it's just me, Qui-Gon Jinn from The Long Take, and you're listening to Rebel Base Guard Podcast. Great pull, kid.
Well, I suppose I could hardwire this thing.
You've seen the show, and like us, you have questions.
Ooh, that was a good one, but try this one on for size.
No question should be left off your list.
Whoa, 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 I got a crazy theory, but hear me out.
But you better have some spares.
Oh, that was one of mine. All right, let's do this instead.
With me, as always, is my friend and Card Squadron Winger.
This is Greg Cass, a.k.a. Ion Cannon.
We've recorded at home and across the U.S.
Last summer, we were from the Boston Common. This week, we're in Chicago.
This is day three of celebration.
The show has had many names, but the purpose is the same. Let's share some time at the table.
Ding, ding, it's time for breakfast.
Welcome to The Breakfast Pack, a Rebel Base Card micro podcast series. A returning Star Wars insert podcast series that asks more questions than it answers. Today on Breakfast Pack number 79, we're asking questions on the first three stories of Tales of the Empire, The Paths to Fear, Anger, and Hate, that all dropped on Disney Plus Saturday, May the 4th. Back after, if not an eternity since the land of the Bad Batch, but at least after a half dozen or more viewings of The Phantom Menace, for now, is my partner in crime and Card Squadron Winger, Gregory Cass from IonCannon.com. Greg, the opening question is, did Lucasfilm and Disney make or lose money off of you?
I've just been doing the final tabulations. Lucasfilm made money, but AMC Theaters lost money on me because I didn't. I only paid for two of my screenings, despite going six times now. Six. The math is still not working out.
We've lost count. We've lost count at this point. It's one of those. I went twice. And the second time it was my family and one other individual in there. So it was almost a private screening, like you had mentioned for one of yours. So yeah, a lot of people saw The Phantom Menace. I didn't see them see it, but I am assuming somewhere a lot of people made up for, you know, like spread the love out over the course of the last several days.
So I will say I was pressured today to go to Alamo Drafthouse, which is not my usual theater chain, but as people may know, they have a pre-show there, so they play a half hour before the film starts of kind of fun content. And in the case of Phantom Menace, it was a lot of 1999 commercials, and it was really awesome. Oh. And my really, really, really good friend PT and somebody else whose name is slipping my mind went and saw it there over the weekend and said I really shouldn't miss out on it. So I got down to Alamo Drafthouse, and I will tell you, it is even more awkward to be the only person in the theater when you have a personal waiter who comes in and asks you what you want. And then I will, this is way, we're off the rails already. About halfway through pod race time, I'm deep into my bowl of popcorn. I'm out of IPA. My R2-D2 runneth empty. And I was like, I really want a milkshake. And then I spent the entirety of the podcast debating, like, do I press the button and call the guy to come and tell him I want a milkshake? I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't. So I wrote it on the little slip of paper and I put it in my thing, but I didn't hit the button. And I thought another 10 minutes. I'm like, do I want to? Maybe I do. Maybe I don't. Finally, I said, I'm doing it. I'm here. I'm going to just go all in. Strawberry milkshake. Here we go. I hit the button. He comes in silently. It's just me in the theater. He takes my little slip of paper. He scuttles out as quietly as he can so that I'm not interrupted viewing Phantom Menace by myself. And then he almost immediately turns around and scuttles back up to me. And I was like, what? And he stopped. He's like, we're out of milkshakes right now. I'm like, no, after all that. So I have not had a milkshake today, but I'm looking forward to having some breakfast with you.
I'm going to say this
I don't care what planet you're from. That's got to hurt, right?
Yeah. I think this story of one viewer and one person and one server at Alamo Drafthouse can live rent-free in my mind for the rest of my life. Because I'm just going to be like, he's like, dude, I'm on a 15.
But Greg, did you get the popcorn tossed in real butter? Because that was like the big selling point when I was there.
I did, and it was incredible. I also, again, this friend whose name I can't remember recommended the loaded fries, and I went all in on a loaded fries, an IPA, and a bowl of very buttery popcorn at the ripe time of 11 a.m. And so it was a lunch, sitting alone, drinking beer out of an RTD2 cup from 1999. It's just, I'm essentially Paul Giamatti in The Sideways, a film we should talk about sometime on The Long Take Review, a podcast hosted by somebody whose name keeps slipping my mind.
I know.
Greg, introduce our guests.
Thank you.
I know, I'm not officially here yet, and yet I've talked. Sorry.
No, that's funny. And what you've heard, because we had an extra seat at the if we would have done this at the theater, we've had a lot of extra seats. Maybe she's here for an intervention, Greg. We have Jen Subchakchai from the Long Take podcast and review. I'm going to just call it Machine after this point, because you are a writing and podcast machine. That, you know, I think some of our episodes go long, and you're like, you know, like, hold my beer. I can do an hour in my sleep. But joining us again, I don't know whether you're going to bring back some sanity to it, but at least you can help me, you know, like, you know, commiserate over trying to finish all the blue milk that I have now that, you know, sadly won't go bad until, what, May 12th. But it's like every time I go in and have a thing of blue milk, now I feel like this is like having a milkshake, because I'm like, even my wife's going, are you drinking that really? I'm like, yes, I'm drinking that. I prove it. You know?
And now I'm wondering what it would be like to make a milkshake using that blue milk. Like, if you got some vanilla ice cream and mixed
it
together.
My buddy, right? Paul is, I'm on good authority. My buddy Paul says it really works in pancakes. So I can't say for the color, but I think the flavor, because it's like vanilla, I think really has an added, you know, does well for pancakes. So maybe that's how I'm going to have to, like, get rid of some of it. I mean, it's great. I mean, don't get me wrong. But I'm just like, you know, it's not one of those things where I'm just going to sit here and, like, pound down, you know, a quarter gallon of blue milk in a sitting. Unlike, say, if it was, you know, I would have no qualms if, like, it was a six-pack going, well, you know what? That beer's been sitting there for, I got to get rid of it. But I have more of like a hang up for some reason of just killing the rest of this bill milk, because I'm just like, I guess because, you know, you don't really see you don't really care about the nutritional information on a side of a beer. You're just like, you and I both know why we're here. But the blue milk kind of says to you, like, look, you should really have this, you know, like maybe a shot glass, because, buddy, you don't look, you know, you need to start doing some laps after you have this.
I think Greg just fell short of the intervention because he didn't try to smuggle blue milk in with his RTD2 cup, right? Like, then we need to talk.
That would be, yeah.
That, I'm sure that R2 had an interesting smell after it. It's like, has that R2 been drinking? Oh my goodness.
Insert the image of him falling over, if you could do that.
Oh, I'm really sorry.
I did not get an intervention, but my good friend Director Bennick, who's been on the show before, finally texted to me. He's like, I'm not judging. I'm just trying to understand. Why are you doing this? That was somehow worse than the, like, I'm worried about you, pal. It's like, oh, even my closest friends don't understand me anymore. But he did so lovingly, and He had threatened an intervention at the next screening I walked into. So when I walked into the theater by myself today, I was just all the more disappointed. I thought you'd all be there. You'd have flown in and we could have a screening. But
we were all in the next one watching Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes or something. I don't know. here's my question, though. Why six times? Was there a number you're hitting? Because it used to be like, a Star Wars movie comes in, it's like three times or something. I like seeing it in the theater three times. You know, once by yourself, once with the family, once just because, I guess. But why six, Greg? Or are you hitting, are we still going?
No, I'm done. AMC loses it tomorrow as well. I think Alamo Drafthouse is hanging on to it another week if people haven't gotten to Phantom Menace yet and want to. It wasn't about the six. It was about the 12 cups. So I have the, as I recounted elsewhere, I have the 12 collector's cups that took me a whole summer to collect. And I got it in my head that I was going to take all of my inanimate cups to the movies. And so on the first day, I had plans to see it twice, once by myself and then once joined by my friends Carl and Steph. And that knocked out four cups. I switched cups between the two screenings. And then on Saturday, I was taking the whole family, so that was another four. On Sunday, Carl and I joined the HoloNet Marauders for a free screening here in Boston. And
that looked dope.
That two more. It was a lot of fun. They are a great crew. Really good to get to meet them in person after circling each other at literally every Boston Star Wars event since the dawn of time. And so that left me with two cups that hadn't been to the movies yet. I asked my local friends if they wanted to go with me Tuesday night, and they said, 9:45 is too late, you crazy old man. So I took Newt Gunray with me on Tuesday night. And Jen and PT had recommended Alamo for the pre-show, and that's exactly my wheelhouse, and I wanted to see it. So I did so, and so that was the last one.
Let me make this clear: I have no qualms with you having 12 cups. As a guy who does a collection type podcast, you know, and I don't know if I was quite prepared for saying I needed to go a screening for every cup I have. Or at least take all the cups I have. Now that actually has some planning, and that this now I'm like, yeah, actually I see. Yeah, I'm like, now I see the logic in it. And I'm like, what am I saying? But that's amazing.
You've
that
been
you
podcasting
had
with him for too long. That's
I know.
Yeah,
know.
That's what you're saying.
Now had you walked in there with the R2-D2, because you have like the cold, like the Pepsi, like the cooler bin, right? Could you have taken that with?
Yeah, that does not travel well, and I've lost the dome before, so I don't let that travel. But yeah, there were times I have brought that weird places, but I've really given it up since I had to. I don't want to keep giving us a tangent. So I had it forever. So people who don't know, these are the big cylindrical chest coolers that you reach in and grab a can of soda from in the convenience store. So I have one from the 1997 special edition release, which is R2-D2. But when my mother moved in 2010-ish, she did not realize the dome was not attached. So I was moving one pickup truck. She was running the other. And I come around a corner and I have this beautiful moment where I see a pickup truck and I see beautiful R2-D2, his dome sticking up right above the cab of the pickup truck, just seeing like a vision out of an X-Wing. And then I went into the storage unit and I came back and I drove over shattered pieces of plastic. And I said, oh no, that dome is not attached. And it had flown off, it had smashed, and then it had been run over like 10 times. So the pieces were all over. And my mom was incredibly heartbroken to have to tell me this had happened. She was so sorry, but long story short, eventually somebody out near Jen, a woman had hers up on eBay, the whole cooler. And I said, I'll pay you the price you're asking if you mail me just the dome. And she said, yeah, I just divorced my husband and I'd love to break the dome off his R2-D2 and send it to you, which she did. And I have a replacement dome that was mailed across the country to me and some
out
poor divorcee. And yep.
Jen, I'll just say that's the second time I've heard that story, and it gets better every time he tells it. That's all I'm going to say. And the other thing is, two, this is so much better than a 25th anniversary special on the Phantom Menace. No, like Daz and I, we had a great time. This is so much funner. And I would say, how many cups do you have for Attack of the Clones? Because, you know, that's going to be coming around the corner in another 5 years. And like, how many viewings of the 25th anniversary of Attack of the Clones?
I keep saying we're safe. Because it's 3 years, and 3 years is the 50th of A New Hope. So I don't think they're going to put Attack of the Clones back out that year. I think they're going to have Star Wars out. So I don't have any Attack of the Clones. Next year is the 20th for Revenge of the Sith. So I'm going to start gathering up those materials.
Ooh. Yeah, I don't.
And I mean, 10 for Force Awakens next year if you really want to feel old. Star Wars is back. Wow. 10 years ago.
I am. We'll start the show at some point, I swear, Jen. But I am curious about these re-releases because it, you know, like what I think Greg put out that it was like second in the box office. But you know, if you have a bunch of these re-releases, it's good for the everybody involved, right? You guys are the ones that follow the movies and all that.
Yes. Although I feel like the general reaction was surprise, like, huh, like an old Star Wars movie beat out a major blockbuster with Ryan Gosling. Or it didn't beat it out. That was the one it was second to, right? It beat Zendaya and Challengers. And so I do think there was when I was reading the trades, there was just enough like subtle kind of like a backhanded compliment, like, oh, good job, Phantom Menace. You did it. that I was like kind of resented as I was reading it. But yeah, a lot of people are saying that that the Fall Guy, you know, it was still number one at the box office, but it didn't do as well as they thought it would. And I was like, no one's saying it. It's because everyone wanted to go see Phantom Menace.
Yeah. When you know you only have a week. But right, if you had your family and you want to do your date, you did Phantom Menace, and I think they'll catch up on Fall Guy. But yeah,
right, yeah, Fall Guy probably goes up next weekend. You know what I mean? Like it's yeah, I agree. Like I think it's because of the limited time window. But yeah, but otherwise, I don't know who else it benefits other than us and Greg's cups.
Well, I mean, if Ryan was doing more dancing and singing in Fall Guy, just saying. All right.
I'll just add, I'm also doing Spider-Man with my son right now. So Sony's in on this. I think to pretend it's just Lucasfilm, Sony's put all 8 Spider-Man movies back in theaters. And I think this is all residue from the strike. But hey, it gets people there. And our Spider-Man screenings have been mostly full. I think only the first couple were completely sold out. But my theaters have been doing kind of 4 nights, at least 2 screenings each night of each Spider-Man movie in order. And even Andrew Garfield got a big crowd this week.
And one last thing about it, it's kind of interesting. If I was a theater owner, right, and I have 12 screens, why wouldn't I want to pack it or like, you know, pad it with guaranteed hits? If I could get them back for a song, even some reruns, and go, you know, like, would I want to put a new film that it's okay, but may not, you know, if some people are just waiting for it to stream, but I can put a known property back on a big screen, I'm like, what have I got to lose by re-releasing this or having events? They don't have to be in there for weeks, and they're probably good for times where it's particularly not a busy weekend for them, where they can just, you know, make a couple of bucks and make their popcorn money. I mean, you know, now I want to go to Alamo Drafthouse to find that guy to give me a strawberry milkshake and some really good popcorn. So I wish there were more in the Chicagoland area. There is one, but it's more towards the city. All right. But y'all came here to talk about not Phantom Menace. So if you're joining us for the first time, I don't know why ratings have been down lately, but this is an insert podcast series in the regular feed. Now it's kind of almost the regular, and the other is the regular. However, hopefully we will be correcting some of that. Greg, Jen, and I are going to trade questions to each other about Tales of the Empire. Or actually, I was sitting there going, is it T-O-T-E? Is that how we're, is it Tote? Is that how we're going to refer to this series now? Because I was thinking, like, I wrote down Tot J. I'm like, no, that's Tales of the Jedi. If you haven't seen this yet, if you haven't seen Tales of the Empire yet, I'm going to remind that we're going to talk about spoilers for this and the story arc. And so we invite you, please, to come back and listen after you've watched at least the first 3 episodes of Tales of the Empire. So this is how we're going to do. We're going to do a round robin set of questions, however much, and we'll, you know, I think we've gotten all the blue milk and all the Phantom Menace stuff out of my system. So I think we're good. We're all tuned up. We're ready to go. Everybody's dying. Or if at this point, if they've fallen off and go listen to Coffee with Kenobi or Reactions or some other podcast, Blast Points. And by the way, nice job, Greg, with the Blast Points t-shirt. That's a nice deal. The shots I was taking.
Wait,
in the
if they go to Coffee Kenobi, they still get Jen's. So they don't send them there. They'll just chase her there instead.
That's true.
Us.
we'll all go crash the Colby cast or whatnot. See what's happening over there.
It was only the first episode. So
no, nice. Okay.
Yeah. Here you get the full set.
All right. So Tales of the Empire, basically the first 3 episodes. We'll be kind of chatting about tonight. They kind of follow the story of Morgan Elsbeth. And so I'm going to let our guest at the breakfast table, Jen, I want you to lead it off. And I am curious about your first question. This could be about all 3 of them. We're kind of lumping them as one. But what is your first question?
So I'm going to go right for the jugular with my first question. Why do we hear Bo-Katan's voice at the other end of that comlink? May or may not be asking this as an actual question. Like that I'm waiting to hear the answer for.
Wow. I did not have that on my list at all. And this is awesome. What do you think, Greg?
I think there's a narrative reason why it has to be Bo-Katan, which is we need Bo-Katan to be tied into Ahsoka to be there. So Bo-Katan is the contact, and then she sends Ahsoka, and then later Bo-Katan can send Mando to go find Ahsoka on Corvus in his episode, right? So there's a tie into that makes sense to me, right? We just have to work our way towards Mando coming and Ahsoka dueling with Morgan in that awesome, I say Kill Bill, but I should really say Kung Fu movie inspired, reflecting pool set as a part of that. So I think there's that reason. Now, why would Bo-Katan be the person who is helping the New Republic is the real question you're asking.
That was the thing I was confused about. I was like, why is she the hotline?
That I have more trouble with. I'm going to go hired gun, right? Because Bo-Katan is out there right now as some kind of mercenary. Yes, she hates the Empire, but if you get in trouble and have to push back against the Empire, take this card. I found this card with an owl on it in a men's room in Ord Mandel. Take this and go there.
Oh, wow.
Greg, save me from my embarrassment and find a real answer to this.
Here's what I'm thinking. I like the bit about, going to instead of the bathroom, I'm going to say you go to your Dunkin' Donuts, right? And you see the one where it's like, I will teach you piano, and then you tear off the phone numbers. But the only way, the way that makes complete sense, I like the way you tied that in, because I'm kind of scratching my head as well going, why would that be Bo-Katan? Now, on the one hand, you could say, okay, Corvus is out there enough, and of course they didn't hear that the Empire had fallen, that the New Republic is in their blue uniformed, guaranteed to die guy. Not since the red shirts in Star Trek have we seen guys going, you are so dead. I'm sorry, it's like, and why send six? But I would only say that Corvus is probably out there far enough that going, hey, look, you're out of there. We can't support. But here's someone who has some armor, which none of you all are wearing at the moment, and is much better with a blaster than all of you at the moment. That's the only thing that kind of makes sense, because Nadura kind of comes in and you're going, man, this is not good. I don't know what you were thinking. I don't know what you're thinking. Just like with it, like as soon as they hit and they see all the guys with guns, you're going, oh, this is going to end well. I'm like, yes, we're going to arrest you. No.
She does seem very out of her depth in a way that is in keeping with sort of the dysfunction we've seen of the New Republic so far. You know what I mean? Like, it makes sense that they're like, it's all right. We'll just tell her to stop. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that seemed to be no one is thinking of everyone is underestimating sort of how sinister and not playing by the rules the Empire is, right? We've seen that in other series and stuff like that, too. So
this is like every high school reunion that you build up in your mind that you're going to go, all right, this is my expectation when I walk into that place, and it's going to be a completely different place when I get out of it. That's essentially the metaphor that I'm going to stick with. But
I just want to pick up on that point as well. And, the first two seasons of Mando, especially, it kind of falters in the third. But it feels like they're in a very kind of out of the way corner of the galaxy, right? Like it is this kind of its own ecosystem in some ways. And so when you think about, as Jen put it, the dysfunction of the New Republic, which breaks my heart, even though I do think they're portraying it consistently.
And, yes.
It feels very much like that message of like good people trying to do good things are still like not as efficient as fascists, which is a little bit problematic. But So I do think there's a way in which you could imagine that Bo-Katan is one of these people who have volunteered to say, look, she's like Carson Teva, where she's out there as somebody who's like, yeah, if you need help defeating part of the Empire, I'm out here. You can give me a call. We still don't know how Bo-Katan kind of fell from power. Right, there's a chunk of her story missing prior to this episode of the show. And maybe that could be she gets involved in the rebellion. It is a part of the New Republic in some way, and then becomes something closer to a ranger or marshal of the New Republic. Man, that could be a show. Why didn't they do that?
She still has a fleet. She has kind of a fleet still at this time. So she is a presence, even though, you know, they're still kind of wandering around, not going back to Mandalore. So, I mean, they are kind of like, they're kind of wandering out there. In that.
I don't think she has a fleet yet, though, right? Or she just got it?
Well, so that was my kind of my why I wanted to start with this, to clarify the timeline of when that particular episode of Tales of the Empire, when is that taking place in relation to, because Morgan Elsbeth is still, like, we know it's pre the series Ahsoka. It's pre Ahsoka's fight with Morgan in Mando. But then, like, how much earlier than that is it? You know what I mean? Like,
it's got to be relatively close after.
Like, are we fresh off Siege of Mandalore? You know, like,
I think we got to be fresh after the Empire falls. Because if the New Republic, if they're going out there and soliciting for planets and systems to join the New Republic, I would assume it's fairly close afterwards.
I was going to be more extreme in that I think it's very close to that episode of Mando because I haven't rewatched it, but I kind of remember thinking of that landscape as kind of still smoldering from the fires, right? And here we see fires get set. Now, that is not necessarily exactly right, but I think it's closer to there than it would be to something like the Siege of Mandalore. So I think if I have my math right, Bo-Katan is out there in her ship and is just receiving, perhaps, her capital ship from Mando in season two of Mando. And then it would be the next episode of Mando, which even within a season of Mando, they are sometimes a little loose and say, like, significant time passes between them. So it drives my canon brain crazy, but I actually really like that they keep dates a little vague so that they don't have to break them later or it doesn't get.
No one's pushing up their glasses later. Being like, well,
actually, yeah.
Not saying that would be you, Greg, at all. But yeah, so yeah, I mentioned Siege of Mandalore, and the second Greg was like, New Republic, I'm like, all right, yeah, it has to be after that. But to me, that's the strongest Bo-Katan Ahsoka connection. And so that's sort of how my brain does, like, the, you know, goes from point A to point B, because we know Ahsoka's showing up after this, right? So yeah.
So I want to start. I, you know, if I'd gone first, I would have just asked, like, these are so awesome, huh? Because I am very positive on these episodes. My own poor memory aside. So I want to start with kind of more, it's a little bit more of a, like, production question, I guess, but I want to ask the question, why do you think they chose Morgan? And this is not the best metric, but I will say nobody was asking for these, right? And I think a lot of people enjoyed her character. I think the actress has been doing a great job at conventions, getting people excited and getting photo ops and all that. You see her circulating a lot online. And I think people really enjoyed her role on the Ahsoka show. But I don't think I heard a single fan say, like, hopefully we get more on her. Like, no questions about a comic, a book, or a show. And yet, I mean, again, I'm here to, like, I thought these were phenomenal. And they were a good set of stories and a good, choice. I'm just curious, why do you think that's who they chose?
I may be biased because I'm number one Ahsoka fan, but if you think about Morgan and Barriss, and I know we're not going to talk about the Barriss episodes today, but if you look at them as just a pair on paper, they're both characters defined sort of in relationship to Ahsoka in a lot of ways. Like, Morgan through the Ahsoka series, Barriss, obviously, through the Clone Wars arc where she betrays Ahsoka. So, like, to me, it made sense as sort of like, oh, well, we just had the Ahsoka series, so let's follow up with some backstories that are sort of tangentially related to Ahsoka. So that's one explanation. The other one might be because Dathomir is going to be very important in the future. And understanding sort of Morgan's arc as someone who came from Dathomir, which for me at least was like the biggest shocker, where I was like, wait, I assume she was like loosely descended from the Night Sisters. This actually reveals to us that she is legitimately a Night Sister and then sort of, you know, lost her powers and kind of like lost connection through the massacre, right? So that was like huge. I was like, wait, this totally changes the way I think about this character now. But I do think if we're looking ahead, especially in terms of the whatever follow-up with Thrawn, you know, what happens next after Ahsoka, whether that's Ahsoka season two or if that's the Mandoverse movie eventually when we get it or anything else that's coming down the pipeline, I do feel like they're kind of seeding context to be like, because you can, at a certain point you can no longer rely on people knowing about stuff that happened in the Clone Wars, right? And so this is a good way to sort of reorient that Clone Wars episode and arc with Asajj, right? It, to be like, oh wait, no, but like we want you to think about the same event but through the lens of the newer shows, through the lens of Morgan and Ahsoka.
I agree with that, and I also think that in going back and watching now, like, you know, Jen and I were kind of talking before we got started about, you know, season 4 episode 19 of the Clone Wars Massacre, in which Grievous goes to Dathomir and pretty much takes out the Night Sisters. And then you start to go, oh, now I get it. Like, there's so much more to Dathomir than just really poor lighting or blacklight lighting and, you know, pods. You know, like, I'm sitting there going, but the thing I think that
The green smoke.
And the green smoke.
Essential.
I see where that comes from. And I like the fact that we now can take Morgan to there. So now there's that. You know, that planting of that seed there, where I think this kind of falls down a bit and kind of goes to what Greg is kind of saying, is that we kind of in the middle get, whereas, you know, Greg's been revisiting a trade dispute that starts off a lot of, you know, discussions. Now we have basically every crappy meeting you've had at work in the presentation she gives for the TIE Defender program. And I thought, you know what, one thing that, and all these were, you know, like written by Filoni, I'm like, I think there was sort of a way he could have really leaned into the weird, really gone full Filoni and go, I am more interested about the visions you were having from the other galaxy and how that story of how you would have convinced Thrawn to go, hear me out. We're going to build a big ring and we're going to go over there and you're going to really like it. Rather than, I think that one, I think the first one really does a great job. I think the third one is kind of like, okay, it does tie in. You've got Bo-Katan, you've got all this. But I really think that kind of this, oh wow, someone stole your idea at a meeting. That's everybody. I think we really could have just cranked up the weird a lot more because there wasn't anything for you to lose. These are supposedly these stories. And like you said, I think sometimes we can kind of go into Tales of the Jedi, Tales of the Empire, and you go, oh, these are interesting stories. Yes. Was anybody out there petitioning for them? No. I love, you know, Diana Lee in Osanto, in a house that's mostly Filipino. I'm like, yeah, we're all there. We're all in. And it was really great that not only she got to voice, you know, herself, but also in the first episode. But I just think that You could have really cranked it up, because at this point, when I'm seeing a Filoni, you know, inspired event, like, yeah, I'm expecting it now. I've got your wolves, I've got your, you know, Night Sisters, I've got all this kind of stuff. I'm ready for the weird. Bring it. I just wish they could have leaned a little more weird. But you know, I think it kind of makes sense because it should tie in, and you know, it would have been interesting to see Asajj in this after what we saw in the Bad Batch. But you can go back and listen to our previous episodes on Asajj in the Bad Batch and find out all the goodness that we thought about that there. We don't need to retread that on this one.
I think you both make compelling cases, and I think you're right to be looking forward, not backward. I'm not convinced Asajj has a lot going on moving forward yet, but maybe once those plans solidify, they'll decide to go fill in somebody's story like that. So if there's somebody moving forward, like it's Thrawn, it's Ahsoka, it's all that's been set in motion. I hadn't thought of this till you were just speaking, Greg, but I was thinking it would have been really cool if her pitch had been, let's use some magic. Like if she had tried to bring something Dathomiri into the Empire and to kind of reconstitute that divide between the Stark military and the, like, we don't put up with that stuff, kind of back to Thrawn and Rebels in some ways, and so on. So that might have been cool. Because I agree, it felt, I mean, we've actually gotten a lot of these conference meetings now. I have a beautiful Andor box set that arrived and was reminding me that, you know, there are a lot of conference room meetings on that show. And they're all incredibly compelling on that show. I mean, I don't think this one quite reached that height. And maybe I'll save this question for a later round, but like, it does make me really think a lot about what Thrawn is doing later. I think you both raising that question is the real question. But Greg, ask a question. Question.
Yeah, because some of this...
Can I respond to Greg's call for weirdness, though, quickly before we move on? So I agree with
That's
you.
That's why
that,
you're
like,
on this call, then.
There were not any rails for this podcast to really fall off of, because I don't think we ever really got on the rails
to
begin with.
Only plastic cups.
Only plastic cups.
But yeah, so I agree that I'm always super happy when the Dathomiri magic shows up. And like, I went going back and watching that Clone Wars episode, Massacre. It's the one, if you don't remember, that has like the crazy voodoo zombies. Like it's really weird in the best way. In like a very old school sort of B movie horror kind of way. And it's really fun. But I do feel like the story that's set up here is really boxing the weirdness out by design, because the whole point is like, she becomes assimilated into the Empire because of this massive loss of her culture, right? That's her whole answer to Thrawn of like, okay, tell me the truth. Why are you really doing this? And she says, as like vengeance for like the culture and the community and the just the total wiping out of who I am, right? So which really nicely we see that kind of, it makes, recontextualizes that scene in Ahsoka where she's back in, like when she becomes a Dathomiri witch again, makes that scene so much more powerful. It's not just like a weird like ritual, but suddenly it's the culmination of like, this is all she's ever wanted, kind of, right? So I do feel like for that arc to really make sense, she has to kind of be the like bland, identityless Imperial officer like for a while.
And it's interesting because in that episode, Asajj rejoins the Night Sisters after her betrayal by Dooku. So it is kind of a nice circular event where she gets it lasts about as long as Morgan's, you know, reentry into the fold. Yeah. But
it's an express baptism.
Oh my gosh.
You two are exposing yourselves as people who aren't addicted to the EA Galaxy of Heroes app, because the zombie Night Sisters are still like core to the gameplay in that app.
Oh, nice.
And you're like, this is from like 10 years ago in one Clone Wars arc, and yet they're still around a lot. I just wanted to earn my internet name, which when I was at a screening of Boston Fans, people would be like, and it was nice to meet you. Ion Cannon, like, yeah, you don't know my real name. So with Thrawn in particular, the way Jen just articulated Elsbeth's story very much matches up with the kind of frame around the Rebels episodes that Timothy Zahn has created. So if people are looking for some summer reads, there are two separate Thrawn trilogies in the new canon, but one of them, the first one, Thrawn Alliances and Thrawn something else.
I'm like, don't Google it, just look on your shelf.
Wait a minute, is this before or after I need to read Dune Messiah for Jen's episode? Is that are the long take summer reading program?
What's going to come into play sooner? I would say Dune Messiah. We can place bets now. What's coming out first, Dune Messiah, or are we going to get to the Mandoverse movie? I don't know. It's a race against the clock on that one.
It's Thrawn Treason, and just to stay on brand tonight, my Chancellor Valorum action figure was blocking it, so I had to stand up.
There you go.
This is where Valorum's power fades.
That trilogy, so Thrawn, Thrawn Alliances, and Thrawn Treason, really trace how Thrawn came to be in the Empire. And essentially, it's the same kind of story that Jen just articulated, where Thrawn had to kind of leave behind his Chiss culture, but still is probably most deeply working for the Chiss. I think there's a real question after Ahsoka, kind of as he expresses how kind of diehard he is for the Empire. But I think it is a nice parallel. So don't
now you're making me
those.
Think maybe when he says for the glory of the Empire, it's sarcastic. That would be great.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true, but it would be fun.
He just really wants to get back to Batuu, which is what the second book is about, is Thrawn goes to Disneyland and experiences Galaxy's Edge. So,
and then it is appalled by the cost of his own outfit sold at Batuu. Like, oh my gosh, who's paying this price for? Well, now it's I wonder if he gets a discount because it's just Admiral instead of Grand Admiral. Do you hop over a Moff?
You can go to Oga's Cantina, and that book has a blaster fight that leaves a scorch mark in a particular place. And if you go into Oga's, it's still there. Which
that's so cool!
Look,
wow,
that's ridiculous, but also that's awesome.
Well, it's like if you don't think about the marketing behind that, then it's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. I guess
Jen just defined modern Star Wars.
I know. Yeah. Basically, you don't think of it. If you think ignore the fact that this is all probably a marketing strategy, then it's great.
Welcome to the Star Wars gift shop. I am a card carrying member, so there we go. All right, I've been kind of looking over some of my questions got taken in, but that's a good thing. Let's see. I won't lead with should Morgan have had better PowerPoint graphics in her presentation. I will skip to, does anyone feel sorry for the Corvus residents now in one of the most interesting turn of sympathies? This episode really didn't, I don't know. What do you think, guys?
I mean, it really shows just how long her reign of terror has been, right? Because, like, they're so beleaguered in Mando, but they're also beleaguered here. So it's like, how long have they just been, like, miserable? And the character Wing, I think his name is. Is that right? He's in those Corvus episodes of Mando, right? Like,
right,
we see him. Yeah. Okay.
The former Disney Imagineer, I think, but I forget what his character name was.
It actually makes me think a little bit about the Naboo movie. So on a recent episode of Long Take Review, we were debating like if you could change one thing about The Phantom Menace. And one answer I often give to that kind of question is I wanted to see the suffering on Naboo a little bit more because it feels kind of stakeless to not have... you know, the queen is worried, but you don't really see why she's worried. It's like, well, there was nobody there at all. And so Corvus is an interesting way in which now with this kind of brief sketch, we do actually see like this is what life under the Empire is like. Right. And it is Elsbeth's reign of terror, as you just said, Jen, but as an extension of the Empire. And I think Andor has also showed us that a lot, that it's like what it means is your life on these planets is just hard labor in a lot of cases and working to fuel the machine. Those Death Stars don't come cheap and nothing else does as well. And apparently TIE Defenders are too expensive. So I do think it gives one of my favorite things about Andor is that you do get that on the ground. This is what normal people felt during Star Wars. And we don't get that often. And I think this is tapping into that just a little, not to the same degree. And it's a different medium. It's a different story being told. But it is something that makes me appreciate that, like, you know, every once in a while, this happens in the real world, too. But somebody's like, you know, maybe it wasn't so bad under the Empire. So we need some of these stories to remind us that, like,
you're like no,
it's actually really bad. Yeah. It's actually terrible. Like, let's not forget that.
Do you feel like there was a moment when she turned on them, though? Because I'm now remembering, I don't know what made me think of this as you're talking, but there is a moment where they're like, you promised us more work. You promised that you would bring us wealth and prosperity, and now the Empire's just stealing all our stuff. Like, what? Like, you didn't cash in on your, like, you didn't hold up your end of the bargain. And then she gets really offended. Like, how quickly they turned on me. Like, you know, they didn't believe in me, that kind of thing. So it's like, is that meant for us to empathize with Morgan? And like, she was genuinely working with them and up until that point, or is that just her sort of like being a narcissist?
Gosh, it is kind of interesting because, yeah, after that first kind of go around, you're going, well, these guys are like, you know, like, come on, you should, you know, like, did you see the email that they sent me? I mean, come on, they just completely took. And so, yeah, I think there was, it's interesting because there's like revenge and vengeance, and she really leaned in on it. You know, especially taking down the plants in the front yard. But at any rate, but yeah, I kind of got that impression, like, okay, everybody was kind of on board, but they really didn't, you know, they had no idea, I guess, what was coming. And I guess by Mando, they've really like, oh, we're really sorry. We're so very sorry. We doubted you. but it is kind of interesting, but I'm kind of curious, was it like, how are we thinking about Morgan now? Yeah, it's like, is she a more sympathetic character or less, I guess, or at least now she's more complete in her minds?
I would
probably say less. Oh, go ahead.
Nope, you.
I was gonna say less sympathetic but more tragic is what this did for me.
Well, and I was just gonna say, I would lump the whole of the second episode together a bit more and say, hey, part of what that turning point is they were jerks to her, but also that was her path upward towards vengeance. And then Thrawn presented the new path forward, the better path forward. And so she can just really crack down and just like extract whatever value she can from this population. But I think I agree with what Jen just said, that, that I did find myself a little more sympathetic, right? Sympathy doesn't excuse any evil doing or any, right? But to see these kind of tragic roots, Star Wars has this nice, you know, wonderful playground of generations of storytelling to play with. And I think in recent years, they've really played more and more with this kind of generational trauma, right? That that the ill effects of the first war are what is fueling all the evil and corruption around the second war. And then onward to the third. And we spoke about this a lot with the Bad Batch finale, right? That Omega is beautiful. Like, it's my turn to fight now. It's my turn to save it. You know, is essentially Morgan is on the opposite trajectory. And like, would be around the same age. It's also timey-wimey. It's so hard to keep straight, but yeah, probably like not all that far off anyway.
So I've got a good one. How does this rendition of Thrawn, because we've seen Thrawn in many different contexts now, compare both on screen and off? How does this version of Thrawn that we get here compare to others that we've seen? And you could take that both in terms of a personal preference or just like, you know, what do we learn about Thrawn here that we don't from the other versions of him, or, you know, whatever it is.
It's so brief, yet so powerful. And I recognize that I sound like the Thrawn, particularly fangirls on the internet who they're like, you know, in the High Republic, we have the self-identified Martian hoes who are the women who adore bad boy Martian Row. I don't know the Thrawn equivalent of the Martian hoes, but I will say there's a large contingent of Thrawn fans on the edge of like, I don't know if you should be into Thrawn that way. But he was striking in that way. What am I saying? I take all that out. I thought he was handsome, right? he came on screen, he was commanding, and he was doing his usual shtick, but it didn't feel old and tired. It was like, yes, like, he is the only one who sees the threat that the rebellion holds. He is the only one who sees that. And so I will say, great Thrawn, but also the Thrawn action figure was in a battle pack, and it came with a Rook, and it came with a Paleon, which makes my little Legends heart so happy that we I believe the trajectory is Paelion is name checked in Rebels and then appears in Moff Gideon's Shadow Council in Mando. But this would be the first time he's really like an active, strong character, as far as I recall. Right?
Is he that
in,
sounds right.
Is he in Ahsoka? He's not in Ahsoka.
I don't think so. Because he doesn't make the jump. Right?
Right.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Because that's why he's in Mando, because he got left behind.
At Lothal.
Yeah, I would say this was probably the best. I think it was like the most, like, Even reading Timothy Zahn's book, Paelion is just sort of like why Doctor, how Doctor, who Doctor. This one, he was much more like, oh yeah, Thrawn. They're more peers to me in this one than in most things where basically Thrawn spends a lot of has to explain to him the whole time. This one, it was really I liked his presentation in this, but yeah, I would say and I would think that like Thrawn in these. Kind of like how they bring in Darth Vader, a little bit goes a very long way. And I think, less is more. I liked he came in. I liked he was wearing, he was just Admiral Thrawn at this point. But yeah, I think he nailed it. I like, like the carryover of the voice. Lars, he just continues to kill it. I was surprised to see Rook. When does Rook win is a great question, because now I'm like, man, he keeps losing these battles left and right. But I think I liked it. And I think you obviously saw it and expected it. It's Morgan's idea for the TIE Defender program. So it's a nice little carryover to Rebels where it's like, okay, that gives it a little more context. And sorry, Governor Price screws everything up. But at any rate.
How'd you feel about it, Jen?
Yeah,
I really loved it. It was, although now I don't want to say I loved it too much, because now I'm like,
the faces, the faces that she made while you were saying that. I wish was not a podcast, because that's some contortioning I don't think I've seen in a while. But
it's like, oh no, are you describing me? That's not good. But yeah, anyway, so Thrawn to me is at his best when he's playing chess when everyone else is playing checkers, right? Like that's the Thrawn monologues that I love the most, when he's just kind of like explaining why is it that he's 10 steps ahead of everybody, and like the bigger picture, and why everyone's an idiot for not seeing this, et cetera, et cetera. And so I feel like this was such a concentrated moment of that it was really delightful to be like, yes. And then it also really, again, like a lot of this contextualizes what we see with them in the Ahsoka series, where she already, at that point, she already has like undying devotion to him. And you're kind of like, well, that's a little weird. But here you understand why, right? You're like, oh, like they are. And I think it definitely ties into what Greg was saying earlier, is that he recognizes himself in her. They never say that in this conversation, but we know that they sort of have a similar story, and they're sort of trying to use and exploit the Empire in a similar way. Ironically so, because I think, I want to say it was like on Reddit or something, and looking, and someone was like, yeah, isn't it sad that Morgan is trying to use the Empire to get revenge against the Empire? Right. But she doesn't know that kind of, right. Like, or that's not probably not, she doesn't piece that together, because that's such a young formative memory for her that she probably just remembers Grievous. She doesn't know politically how that's all tied together. Right. But so I really like this moment where you really get the sense that he's trying to appeal to her, and there's a sense of mutual respect, right? That's what I probably like the most, is that like later on she acts more like a minion, but here she seems more like a peer almost.
I just want to pull to the surface, in case people aren't familiar with, especially Legends, Thrawn. Thrawn is Sherlock Holmes, and Paelion is his Dr. Watson. So when Greg's saying like all he does is ask questions, it's deliberate in that way. It's the construction of it is supposed to be the same. And I think that fits with what you said, Jen, because it's a perfect little Sherlock monologue, right? He sees the pieces, he sees the clues, and so on, as a part of that. And again, I am experiencing more and more either middle age, either Phantom Menace on the brain or what have you, that like it is hard to put all the pieces in timeline order in a show like this. And I also wanted to say I like it. Like, it's a rewarding type of puzzle. But to think about what you just said and how it's like, yes, the galaxy doesn't actually know that the battle droids belonged to Palpatine as well as the clones and couldn't piece that together necessarily. And maybe I'm just really slow, but like, oh, when you say she wanted revenge because her people were wiped out, what is her final act but to bring her people back? And so whether this will prove to be revenge or not, her arc, as we now understand it, is success. Like, we did. Yeah. Like, put up the banner. Yeah. We did it.
We did it, Thrawn.
mission accomplished. Yeah. So that's very cool. Well, I will piggyback onto this with my other question. Again, because I'm in a very articulate mood, my notepad says Thrawn/witches. Go. But what that question means is,
can you take a photo of that, please? This is not good podcasting, but I'm being very selfish here. I need a photo of that on the internet.
All right. So with Thrawn and witches, we get him clearly signaling that she is the first Dathomiri he has met. So I basically want to say, if this is the moment he says history has a lot to say about the witches of Dathomir, I wanted to test you here to see what was true and what was false. I want to ask, like, how do you see that as the starting point that eventually becomes, hey, let me just take like 2,000 sarcophagi between galaxies for you? Like, NBD, like, let me just bring them back for you. Like, it's on the way. I'll just stop. I'll just drop them off. So, like, is this part of some kind of Thrawn master plan? Is this something he's doing out of loyalty to her? Like, Thrawn/witches, go.
I mean, a part of it is, and we see more of this, I'd say, in Rebels than anything else, but his love of art and culture and artifacts, his sort of, like, inner archaeologist could be at play in that, right? Where, like, he just has a natural interest in the Dathomir witches because they are a race lost to time, kind of, at that point, and one that, like, has it, like, a lot is seems very culturally rich in terms of like lots of traditions and lots of, you know, and actual magic and stuff like that. So I'd say that's definitely a part of it. Whether that's all of it, I'm not sure. I mean, I think at the end of the day, Thrawn is a strategist, right? And so he sees the witches as a means to an end, as a pawn in his game, probably, at the end of the day. But, and he also uses culture as, like, a weapon, right? So, like, his knowledge of, like, he actively uses that against his opponents, is like understanding their culture and stuff like that. So I do think it's all kind of messily tied together, but yeah.
And you're kind of forgetting Thrawn's podcast, Galaxy Pickers. I mean, if anyone who is good at picking up and looking over and telling you the worth of antiques, I would say find somebody who has a history on Dathomir, because that could be valuable one day. And no one, like, all right, Greg just completely, I just lost Greg on that
now
one.
I'm just picturing Antiques Roadshow, but with hosted by Thrawn. It's great. I would watch that.
I think this has great value.
Well,
no,
it
but
has
I,
a good patina, which means you should murder their families.
Once again, there has to be rails for us to get on so we could fall off the rails. Never had them to begin with. This one had to, this is classic stuff. Sorry, Anthony from Force Ghost. This might be even crazier than that episode. But I you know,
oh no, I listened to that episode.
Our reputation precedes us, apparently. But, you know, on the one hand, you go, this makes sense because he's picking up something that I think, you know, he sees the Empire's, you know, potentially, downfall at some point. He's positioning himself, like you're saying, he's the master chess player. So why not pick up somebody that someone else, you know, like the Empire doesn't clearly see her value. But I don't know, did she sign in at the front desk as Dathomiri Morgan Elsbeth?
Oh, yeah. How did he even know?
That's the other thing that I was going to say. Does he really know? But then again, hey, it's Thrawn. You could really just say Thrawn just knew because he was paying attention, blah, blah, blah. He recognizes, you know, the marks on the forehead or whatever, something like that. But yeah, on the one hand, I'll give him the fact that, okay, he had some good intel. But on the other hand, it makes sense that he would pick up this and have this as an asset that he can go, hey, look, maybe, you know, in case of emergency, release the green gas at any rate, or something like that. But
what is it I say in the intro? Like, whoa, I got a crazy idea, but hear me out. So I'm going to do that moment.
That's exactly what you say, Greg.
He's good at doing that now. He's very good.
You watch a sitcom and you see the character do a shot that's in the credits that you've seen for like five seasons or something like that. I'm going to do that right here. So I think I have the timey-wimey-ness of this right. I think Thrawn has not yet encountered the Bendu. And we recall at that major battle, he realizes that his military might and strategy is insignificant compared to something outside his understanding, right? The beauty of that moment is he had no clue the Bendu could be a possibility, and that's something he had to contend with. So my crazy theory is, what if after that moment, he starts casting about for like, well, I need to start thinking entirely different about the way the universe works. Hey, Morgan, tell me more about this green smoke sometimes is slipping out of your crack under your door late at night. And let's piece that together. And then maybe the plan can come together as he finds something else. And that also, I'm really not going to go into his extra his book plot lines, but part of the book plot lines are that he is trying to learn as much as he can from this side of the galaxy to go save his people in the unknown region. So it would seem like, oh, maybe this is all like his now. He thought the answer was really strong, powerful machines. The Bendu changed his mind. Now he's going to track this supernatural thing.
I really like that.
I think it rethinks my whole Apple Android iMessages thing. So instead of like the green bubble, right? I'm just now going to refer to it as green magic messages. they're a little different than iMessage.
Except they're not magic at all. They're annoying. Like,
you know, I'm just going to say, hey, look, it just
mess
works
up
a little
lots of
different.
Good group chats.
It's kind of like the Force. It just works a little different. Sorry, I'm an ex-Apple employee, so there we go. I have no idea.
I mean, really, the answer to your question, Greg, is because witches and zombies are cool.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean,
number three on my list tonight was magic in Star Wars. What do we think? So just nailed it. It's cool. It comes down to.
Right? When did your notes start sounding like a 1940s newspaper? Thrawn and witches, go.
I do that voice on the other podcast. I'm not doing that voice here.
I'm still trying to figure out why two of my questions have to do with Nadura. All right, I prepped poorly. I'm gonna take off more on the Imperial budget crisis, which this is the second show where I'm like, why are we so concerned? Oh, right, and I get the balloons. why are we so concerned about the Empire making money? All right, why didn't the New Republic? I have one. This is the best one I've got left. Why didn't the New Republic come back and forcefully remove Elsbeth after they done killed? You know, did she not leave a forwarding address or hey, you know, because she's going to petition Corvus to enter the. Did anybody not notice she was not there anymore, or was she sort of like a junior congressman that no one's like, no, okay, whatever, that was a fringer, and I guess we're gonna have to elect somebody else. That's the best I got, sadly.
I think it's limited resources, and I'm trying to remember Teyvo went into an office on Coruscant, and in Favreau fashion, there was some... Tim Meadows. I was like, which 90s comedian was in the office? Because it had to be one, because that's who Favreau cast in those roles. Yes. And Tim Meadows is essentially saying, like, yeah. I think what just happened on Corvus happened on 10 more planets that week and 20 that more week. The week after. And
well, we see it in Ahsoka, too, right? I can't remember the name of the planet, but the one with the other 90s Jack comedian Black. Is the bad guy.
the right? Jack Black
planet? There's this whole operation going on, and the Republic has no idea. Right. And Hera is like, I cannot believe this is just happening right under our nose.
Yeah. Cause apparently they said, well, news travels, doesn't travel, or doesn't, we don't get a lot of news here. So Yeah, I thought it was, I thought it was a little odd that, that no one came back. But then again, now that you mention it, yeah, it's a, you know, as they keep saying, just how inept the New Republic is. Sorry, New Republic.
Yeah, I was gonna say that. That goes right back to how Jen portrayed it earlier, and it is sad, right? Because you think about, you know, this is the Republic Jin and Cassian died for, right? And go down the list that Leia fought so hard for, and you want it to work and to function. And you know, I don't spend a lot of time listening to people who bemoan when Legends got kicked out of canon, but when they did that, like, the Legends government was like, all your heroes of the Rebellion just being amazing all the time, don't worry about a thing. And it is not compelling storytelling. And so I think this flawed version of the New Republic is heartbreaking, but that's because it's not at the end of the story, right? And we're going to hopefully see a restoration of something. I don't know, maybe the answer is just smaller governments and not one galaxy wide. Am I arguing for states' rights accidentally right now? I'm going to shut up.
Well, I'm just, and yes. Sadly, I just thought of a better question. I was sort of like, man, what if it wasn't Bo-Katan on the other end of that comlink, but General Leia? And I'm like, that would have been so much better. Sorry.
Would be, but
that would have been rough.
Jen, I know you've got some questions left. Let's just completely, well, let's gut this. Let's gut this.
I'm going to ask my most bitter question, and that is, will we ever learn how Morgan got that Beskar spear? Because I really thought this would be the place to do that.
That's a really good point.
Like, was it just lying around on Corvus? Like, I don't understand.
I'm thinking, who's the solo villain? Dryden Vos?
The Paul Bettany. Crimson Dawn guy?
Paul Bettany, Crimson Dawn. Yeah.
Oh, I was right. Okay.
Yeah.
You're just looking at me
I'm like,
I guess I said the wrong thing.
No. I think there's a Zoom delay. I can imagine a treasure room like his, right? Like, if you think about how his office just has all the spoils from this planet. But as I understand it, all Beskar paths have to lead back to Mandalore in some way. Does Bo-Katan come with the Beskar spear to answer the call and then lose?
No, because she has it already by then.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah.
It sounds like a much more interesting 10 minutes of animation than let's go to the PowerPoint and let me show you. And everybody kind of who isn't falling asleep?
Imperial Shark Tank?
Imperial Shark Tank. Oh, my God.
That's basically what it is.
That's what it is. So... Yeah, I mean, either bring the weird or bring the Beskar. But yeah, I think that would have been, man, kind of a miss.
And it feels weird. Like, I don't think we're ever going to get it now. You know what I mean? Like, it feels too small to actually be a story in something else. So this scope and scale of the Tales of Shorts, like, would have been a perfect place. But I also totally understand, because I don't know, maybe I should be careful what I wish for, because I'm also now trying to write the screenplay in my head for that. And it would be like, ta-da, the Beskar spear, and she picks it up, like, and that's kind of cheesy, you know what I mean? Like, so maybe they tried to write that, and then they were like, this is too cheesy, we can't do it.
Well, I mean, I guess maybe it makes a case for why Bo-Katan's there, to go back to one of our earlier questions, because that probably would have been on Bo-Katan's radar. That did she know that? Did Bo-Katan know that Morgan had the Beskar spear? When, you know, at that time, Beskar is a limited resource, and some person who's wielding it out on Corvus has it. Maybe that makes sense. And maybe, you know,
maybe Morgan made a cameo appearance at the Purge with Moff Gideon.
Ooh.
Could be.
And just found
Grabbed
it.
Some Beskar and ran.
Grabbed some Beskar and just ran.
You can't really sneak that in your pocket. Like, then.
No, you can't put that in with the carry-on items. No.
No. That's literally me at the Orlando International Airport being like, so my son bought this lightsaber, can he take that in the overhead compartment, or do we have to check this? And the poor bedraggled desk clerk being like, I see 700 of these every week. Like, why are you wasting my time?
Right? Why are you dragging Henry through this? You know, like, he's an accessory now.
Wait, so what's the answer?
You can take them on board. You can treat them like a poster. If you ever travel with a poster tube, you can take your poster on board as a third carry-on item and put it in the overhead bin. So
And you call it a driver. They're happy. It's a driver. That's what it is. It's not a lightsaber. It's my new driver. See, it has Titleist. It just says Lucasfilm, but that's Titleist. That's like a set company of Titleist.
All right. Well, so I'm going to steal my last question from PT, the third co-host of Long Take Review, who is in love with these episodes and itching on deck if we need somebody for the second set. That's probably should have been an email to you or text message to you, Craig, but PT's ready if we want to.
Once again, we have to have rails to get on so that we can go off the rails. So that tracks with this episode.
So PT's first reaction to Jen and I over text on our Long Take Review chain was I would characterize how at least how I read the text as kind of reluctantly admitting that if there was no new Star Wars animation show, he would be okay with Tales of the Blank as like six episodes every year from here on out. And I couldn't decide what my feelings were about that. So the question is, in honor of PT, is this what Lucas Animation should be now? Should it just be these shows where we can go pick out little pieces and tell interesting stories? Or do you think they really should still aim for whatever the next Bad Batch / Rebel / Clone Wars is?
So I'm going to confess that I did listen to another podcast before coming on the show, and that was Sky Talkers. And it was one of those things where, like, it came up, it was the next on the queue, and it just started playing. And I was like, oh no, I can't listen to this. And then I'm like, oh, but it's really, it's good. I'm going to listen to it. and then I pulled in my driveway and was like, well, I guess that's spoiled now. But basically, they explained that Dave Filoni in interviews has said that these tales of projects are meant to be him training his apprentices in Lucas Animation and trying to like make it so that after he's gone there's a strong legacy that kind of can keep going at the same rate and sort of with the same quality that it has under his reign, right? So, or I shouldn't say reign because I used that word with Morgan earlier under his tutelage, right? So I think that provides like an interesting behind the scenes connection. So I think that tells me the answer would be no, because this is kind of a stopgap sort of project to kind of help bridge the next generation of directors and writers and animators at Lucasfilm. But that could mean that we have these in between the other series for a while. You know what I mean? Like, and they really could. And this, again, I'm stealing this from Sky Talkers. They were sort of joking around with like, well, if you could pick any Tales of the Blank, what would you want? And they were like, Tales of the Senate. And they talked for like 10 minutes about how people would think that's super boring, but to them it would be really interesting. So I do think it is like the Tales of framework is very generative and could be have a lot of possibilities. So they could do it for a long time. But I do feel like it's going to be an interstitial thing and not necessarily the thing we get from now on, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I think it also means that Bob Iger should be listening to Sky Talkers. If we're thinking about Succession, he might want to pick up some pointers about who should take over for him. I would hope that the only thing that I like this vehicle, and I like it more now as sort of a training ground. And I think that just given the animation style, that it's very cost effective to do. But I also kind of miss, much like I think what we're going to be seeing in Andor season two is that nice long arc. And, you know, don't come at me with a lot of filler episodes. We just finished like, you know, really three seasons of a really great animated series that got a beginning, middle and an end, and which I don't take for granted. But I do want them to continue doing some long stories because you can do things in animation that you can't do cheaply in live action. And I think you're going to lose an opportunity there. To get weird, you know, to do something to introduce us to some new characters that we're all going to like cry at the end of going, she hugged Crosshair first. and that was me, you know, so but I do like this as a way to tell more stories. I'm like, I'm surprised we're not going to get Tales of the Clones at some point. Because it was funny, 'cause we talked about their clones are done. We're not going to see them anymore in like the first couple of frames into the episode one of Tales of the Empire. I'm like, oh, we're back at a Clone War. Ooh, Greg, great way to call that one. Greg M, not Greg C. But I really would like them to do, you know, go somewhere else. Give me something else, and don't be afraid to go long form. But hey, if you want to use this as a minor league camp, go for it, because we need more, you know, directors and showrunners and producers in this galaxy to keep it going forward, so that Filoni can die in peace at some point, or retire, or both. I don't care. Retire.
Do you think we get Tales of the Rebellion next? Like, is that the next logical? Because it does feel like they went light side, dark side, but they didn't go Jedi Sith. They went Jedi Empire.
Well, but so much of the Jedi was about Dooku, right? Like, that wasn't a happy-go-lucky Jedi tale. It was dark sidey. R.I.P. Yaddle. Boss area band screening, there was a woman in the audience. I was not familiar with a lot of the audience, who was going, "Where is she? Where is she?" And when Qui-Gon takes his step back and you see Yaddle in the council chamber, you go, "There's my girl!" And I was like, "All right, Yaddle
That's
in
amazing.
In the building." So,
no one did that for even Peele, put it that way.
Hey, it's all poof in this household. We are a Yario poof household. I told my kids that we're straight poofing it. There's a t-shirt for you, straight poofing it. All right. So I think my answer to the question is I want this to go on forever. And, just to continue on the wish list, this is a great little Star Wars day present every year, right? If Lucasfilm has really leaned into this, like, I thought it was perfect. Like, Saturday morning release, everybody got up and could enjoy it. It's not too much of a commitment. And I do think there's an advantage to not being burdened by the stakes of a theatrical film or a new series. I mean, we were just reminiscing about Bad Batch, which we ended up really liking, but when they were like, hey, 15 episodes coming of these clones, you might kind of remember. We were all like, what? Like it didn't sound like it was going to be something as great as it was. And I think if you were suddenly to kind of launch, whenever you launch a new show, it has that weight. And whereas this kind of is light and breezy. In that fan group on Sunday, we'd all kind of, you know, we did the modern conversation of how many did you watch? Which one did you watch? Okay, I watched them all. And then when we kind of could have some safe discussion, I think the general reaction was positive, although a lot of people did say they much preferred Tales of the Jedi to Tales of the Empire, which probably is more the characters involved, if I had to guess from kind of what was said in the room. And that kind of makes sense. I mean, Barriss is not nearly the name that Ahsoka or Dooku is. And I think
I got really excited when the trailer showed Barriss, though. Yeah. Just gonna say,
yeah, and that's true. I did as well. What's next? I mean, I go back to the old Tales of. I think you could easily do Tales of the Rebellion. Tales of the New Republic was a book back in the day. We even had Tales of the Bounty Hunters, Tales of the Mos Eisley Cantina, Tales of Jabba's Palace, and the new From a Certain Point of View books have kind of gobbled up the kind of format that those Tales books used to use. But you could absolutely do weird stuff too. And you know, if there's a big new show where you have to recast Princess Leia, that's a problem. But if there's like three episodes where you hire Billy Lord to come do voice work, nobody's gonna freak out, nobody's gonna go crazy. Hey, sure, Harrison, come voice Han. Or you know what, Alden, you're cheaper, come on in, buddy, like, let's do it.
Well, it's interesting if you have like what, the 50th of A New Hope coming down the road at some point, having Harrison Ford, you know, do some animation voiceover isn't the craziest thing in the world either. Or Mark Hamill, who, you know, I think he's done some animation before, I think. So
he just announced he's doing the new Lego show they just announced on Star Wars today or thereafter. So we're getting Ahmed Best and Mark Hamill coming back. Mark Hamill said, "I signed on as soon as I heard Darth Jar Jar." So.
Fair enough. All right. Anything else before we wrap things up and go into Pringles Can's review?
Let's rate it.
I'll go then. I would give this a 9. 9 out of 10 Pringles. I was pretty happy with it. I'd say that like individual episodes might not make it up to a 9, but the arc as a whole, I think, and to go by what I think Greg said earlier, that, you know, this wasn't one we asked for. Like, no one was asking for Morgan Elsbeth backstory. But I think considering that and how compelled I was by it, I think that that's a testament to the storytelling. So yeah, I really like this.
I think that's right. And because I'm the one who raised the specter of like fans getting to demand what they want, I just want to say it's usually better when it's not what the fans asked for. Mm-hmm. Right. And we see that in film and television. It's like, once you start focus grouping things down or listening to what the internet says about your show, it's over. So I'm all for ignoring what the fans say they want because they don't get it and doing something different. I will not talk about Phantom Menace anymore, but that to me is when we think about the legacy of Phantom Menace. I just wrote this in my 14th Letterboxd review of Phantom Menace this year, which is that like it could have been the easiest of easy films to make super popular, right? Like you could have just buy the books, kind of done an easy play it safe, kind of paint Return of the Jedi a slightly different color and put it in theaters and everybody would have lost their mind. But instead, George wanted to do something big and different and he took a giant swing, which a lot of people didn't agree with. But I think the testament of these last 25 years is that it has been successful, even if it was always commercially successful. But I even think the critics have come around on it. I am tempted to switch to Taco Bell cups instead of Pringles cans, but the conversion rate is really tricky in the math. So it's kind of like Truegates to Whoopie Whoopie. But I will say, I actually really agree with Jen. Jen and I think, are both in grading caves. So it's like we're in the constant like, hey, you did just about everything, but you didn't blow me away. Sounds like an A- to me.
Yep.
And that's where I land a lot.
Oh no, is Morgan Elsbeth gonna email me about how she really wanted an A? Like that's terrifying.
Yeah. Well, B+ and she'd burn down your house. But yeah. So you know, I think an A-, despite what students think, is a fantastic grade. And it's a grade that says you did really amazing good work. And I do think these episodes are really great. I want to go back to what Jen said at the beginning is like it just makes you reassess every frame this character has occupied before this. And that is special and strong. So I'm going to win 9 Pringles cans. We'll see where I end up on the others if we do the other 3.
Oh,
Greg,
yes.
What do you think?
I think if you're thinking about like, you know, You make Star Wars, you can't do it in focus group. It's the same thing with self-checkout. Everybody thinks they want self-checkout, but we all suck at self-checkout. That's why we shouldn't have it. You know, it's like because no one gets it. You're stuck in there. And meanwhile, everybody, all the lines that look longer are just breezing through. So that's Star Wars. Yep. It's like bring a Star Wars I wasn't expecting because if I tell you exactly what I want, it's going to suck probably. Because I'm not, otherwise I'd already beat Lucasfilm, but I'm not. But on this one, I think I'm going to go a little lower. I'm going to, hear me out. I'm going to go with an 8. And mainly because I think that although we weren't expecting Morgan Elsbeth, I think they could have really leaned into a little more weird. I think we could have really, I think it's one of those things where I think it was the great idea, but I just wasn't that. You know, I love the fact that she's behind the TIE Defender, but I didn't need to see a work meeting gone bad and all that. I just think that we could have gone a little more. And if you had the character, I think there was a couple more things you could have done or places you could have gone that would have made some interesting stories and still tied in and all that. So I would just say I think the A for effort, but I'm going to say the 8 for the execution on this.
Now you're making me want a Night Sister like Harry Potter series. We needed one more episode before this one started of her practicing magic as a teenager.
I like it. I like it. All righty. Woof. Oh my God, an hour and a half. I'm impressed with this. I like this. This was fun. And I like your take, Greg, that it's a nice annual treat. I mean, this is like it comes out on May the 4th. It was weird because I was doing laundry and all of a sudden I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. There's some there's some stuff that I can throw on while I'm doing it. And it was just like new Star Wars stories. And at the end of the day, yeah, we had that story that we're revisiting after 25 years. Some of us revisiting that story many, many more times than others, but still enjoying it. So it was a great weekend. A great way to kick off May the 4th. And I think, hey, you know, you could probably throw a movie. You could probably throw a Star Wars movie because someone every year is having some kind of anniversary at this point. You could, and you might as well throw in some tales. So I'm down for everything. But to get Jen and Greg back to where they need to be in their own timelines to keep this timey-wimey, because we also have a new Doctor Who series that's cut, that also is starting this weekend, too. So...
Was that really this weekend? Oh,
I think
no.
I think it starts on the.
I'm not ready.
It's the 10th. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause now it's on Disney Plus and you know, you're going to be able to see it. I think it's like Friday. I think you can start watching it. I think with the time difference, cause I think it's a worldwide distribution. So now you'd like, I'm kind of cribbing from another podcast, but, it's nice that you don't necessarily either have to have, you know, like just iPlayer or you have to like crib it off the internet or something like that. You can just turn on Disney Plus and there it is, in all its glory. So, one way to kind of speed things along until The Acolyte and we bring everybody back again for however many episodes of that we'll have, as I can just see Greg's eyes curdle going, oh, please, God, give me a break. But anyway, Jen.
Hey, look, I stayed every screening of Phantom Menace to watch that scene from The Acolyte again. It is fire. It's going to be so good.
It's
going to
be fun. It's going to be a fun series.
Acolyte is on.
Yeah, where's your
Acolyte
breakdown of that?
Breakfast. Sorry, I was just making sure I got all the words right.
No.
We could break that down. I want to go to bed. Just kidding.
Jen, I think the thing is after like what 15 episodes of the Bad Batch, we did do an Acolyte trailer, didn't? Yes, we did. We did Light and Fluffy.
No, we did the trailer, but not the theatrical scene.
Oh, let's nope. just
or
wait
the new
the
trailer.
Acolyte.
We got yeah, a new trailer too over the weekend.
Oh, that's true. So. Yeah. Yes. But I'm just saying, like, you know, there's new Acolyte content you haven't covered yet.
I want you to enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. Is what I'm trying to say to you, folks. However much you got to do it, let's enjoy our Memorial Day weekend and come back strong for the 2-episode premiere. Hello. Of Acolyte and Fluffy breakfast pack. But at any rate, until then, Jen, I know that you have many, many more hours of podcasting, perhaps this week, if you play your cards right. But where can they find you and said long take?
So you can find my written reviews and the podcast that I do with Greg and PT and our other colleague, Antonio, the Long Take Review podcast. You can find both of those things at thelongtakereview.substack.com. So I behind on, I still have to do a Bad Batch finale review. I have this large queue of written reviews. Bad Batch finale, need to do one for Tales of the Empire, and then I've been meaning to do one for X-Men 97. So like I don't know when I'm gonna do all those. Because I do cover everything Star Wars and Marvel that's new. So and X-Men 97 is so good. Originally I was like, well, maybe no one will notice. Before the series came out, I was like, maybe no one will notice if I don't write about that one. But it's so good that I'm like, oh, I got to do it. So that's coming in the pipeline. If you are not tired of hearing Greg talk about his Phantom Menace cups, we have 2.5 hours of the Phantom Menace discussion. We had a great time. We just kept going and go. Usually we run long, but that was like a particularly epic outing, I think. It's a good mix of, and that's in our feeds right now, so you can go listen to it right now. But if it's a good mix of like movie critic perspective and sort of like pure joy fandom, we had a lot of fun with it. And then you can find me on social media at Sobchakchai, Sobchakchai on Instagram and Threads. And thanks for having me on again.
No problem. Hey, and are we saying that we need to see a Colby Cast mashup on X-Men 97, Jen?
I would do that.
We need to get you invited on the Colby Cast to talk about the X-Men because we're talking about enough craziness here. We don't have rails to get on to even bring up X-Men 97, but I think that would make a killer Colby Cast episode, and we'll just kind of pass along the buck going, hey, I think you need to do an episode of this, and then go, ah, so tag, you're it, and Colby.
I've already roped Colby in for Deadpool and Wolverine when that comes out for our show, so you have that to look forward to.
And of course, there is the Dune Messiah summer reading program sponsored by the Long Take. So at some point, I've got to bust out that book and start reading it. It's not summer yet, so there we go. Still got time. All right, Greg, besides the theater seeing the, what's left of The Phantom Menace in whatever screens are still showing it, where can people find you?
Well, I'm on the Long Take Review this week talking about Phantom Menace, as was just said. I also just wanted to put the tease out there that I have a huge amount of movie homework this weekend because it's Mad Max season. Ooh. And we're going to be headed into Furiosa over on Long Take Review. So expect a retrospective, which we only do for movies that really deserve it, of all the Mad Max films, especially Fury Road, and then an episode reviewing Furiosa at the end of this month, at the end of May. Other than that, I am on Holonet Marauders this week talking about both arcs of Tales of the Empire, if you want a preview of my thoughts on the Barriss arc. I am on the Wampa's Lair next week discussing the novelization of The Phantom Menace. And I am taking a very, very long nap from next Thursday to Sunday. So nobody call, nobody write. I will not be seeing Phantom Menace. I will be sleeping somewhere tropical. So that's it. All right. But great to have you on, Jen. And Greg, always a pleasure, obviously.
I'm still, wait a minute. I want to go back to, am I going to hear the Long Take talk about Beyond Thunderdome? Are you going to make my old heart sing here? Are we going to have some discussion?
Is that the third?
Oh, God.
What? It is the third. That's when PT was like, you don't have to watch that one.
No!
I think.
I'll take over for him if he doesn't want to watch it.
No, he's saying it's us. It's Greg and I who are the problem. Yeah. Yeah.
I said, let's just do Fury Road. And PT said, if you're going to do it, you should do it right and watch all of them.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try.
He was like, at least watch the first two. Yeah. Yeah. That's he was trying to bargain
yes,
with us.
Yes.
That's putting the long in the Long Take. Now, like I said, if you cut him off, I'll bring him over here and then we can get that out of his system. I'm more than happy to talk about the Road Warrior, Mad Max, and Beyond Thunderdome, which is a crazy film of its time. And come on, Tina Turner. Come on. You know you want to watch it. Come on, come
I
on. You
I think he
watch
literally
it.
Said those words.
Yeah.
He literally said those words to us. So, okay.
All right, all right.
Is
all
he
right.
here? What is, like, what's going on?
Channeling PT. All right. And if you have any questions or if you're still listening, God love you. This was a fun one. I enjoyed this one. And I'll enjoy talking about the next three. Like I said, this is a gift that's going to keep on giving. But if you have any questions for us, for the Breakfast Pack, about Tales of the Empire, or anything else, you can catch the Rebel Base Card on the socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky, and Hive at Rebel Base Card. All right. We've got a lot of people that need to get some rest and catch up on some things. So we're not going to have this go any longer, but we will be back soon talking about Tales of the Empire, the latter half. But until then, for Jen Subchokchai and Greg Cass, I'm Greg McLaughlin. We're going to return you to your podcast playlist and Mad Max playlist already in progress.
This podcast is not affiliated in any way with Topps, Disney, or Star Wars, nor is it endorsed by Disney or Lucasfilm, and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. All names and sounds and any other related items are properties of their respective trademarks and or copyright holders here in the U.S. and abroad. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com.
I'm going to nod like I know what that means. Yes, I also think about things as a professional podcaster like that.
So, you know that's going in the blooper reel, right? You just committed that. A returning Star Wars insert. Let me do that again. All right.
The light made that look really weird on your forehead.
Yeah. You had a really weird color.
I can change the color of this too for some reason. Here's the most useless thing a microphone could have. What color would you prefer? Would you like to have, let's see, Qui-Gon? Or would you like to have A New Hope Luke? Let's see. No, never mind. No closer to finishing this episode.